The confident mum decides that while her family is important, so is she. And so it begins. Hi, mums. Welcome back to the Confident Mum podcast with Olga. If this is your first time listening, then welcome. Thank you for joining us today. You've come in at the deep end. We're talking about a profound topic, trauma and therapy, and I have an amazing guest. You're probably going to want to listen to this more than once, and you may need to bring out your pen and pad because my guest is dropping some real gems. But whatever you do, enjoy the episode, and I'll see you at the end. Hi, mums. Welcome back to another episode of the Confident Mum podcast with Olga. So glad you've joined me again today. On today's episode, we have a guest. Woohoo! A really nice, wonderful guest. Her name is Dionne. You may be familiar with her podcast, Love Laid Bare. And if you're not, you're going to want to be after this episode. It's an award-winning podcast, and it's where she conducts in-depth interviews on situations that really affect our everyday life and impact us in ways that we may not necessarily understand or know why. So the conversations are always so useful, and I thought I have to have her on because of those of you who remember from my last episode, I was talking about how potentially trauma could be affecting areas of my life that I'm not being made aware of up until reflecting over this pandemic period. So without further ado, we'll move on to Dionne.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. What have I missed? If you want to let the audience know a little bit about you and the podcast.
Oh God, what have we missed? Do you know what? Because I do so many episodes, yeah. It's kind of like, so I feel like I'm now coming towards the end of season six. Yeah, I feel like I'm approaching the end now because say, like, you know, around 10, 11, 12 episodes. Mm-hmm. So the plan for next season really is to kind of focus on more so on self-love and all the different aspects of that. I did an episode a couple of weeks ago with a relationship coach called Victor Granville. Okay. And he really broke down how, you know, how trauma can affect how we approach relationships. And, you know, when we're thinking about self-care, we have to encompass so many different areas of our lives rather than, you know, I guess the kind of typical thing we see, especially on Instagram, is like, you know, self-love. Yes. It's like bubble baths and facials and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And actually, mm-hmm. self-love requires a much deeper level than that. So
checking yourself.
Yeah, exactly, you know. That'll be my focus for mm-hmm. next season. So
that's gonna be good.
So yeah, so no, it's been good. Thank you for having me. I'm actually
no, thank you.
That intro was really nice. I was like, oh wow, is that me?
Oh good. No, there's nothing less than you deserve. I mean, six episodes in. And just as a black woman who's hosting such an amazing podcast, I'm just, you know, hats off to you. And oh, I was scrolling on Instagram and I had to listen to a couple of your episodes, and it's so weird how the universe, if they want to call it, how God, yeah. you know, directs you to certain people at certain times. Mm. Like I said, I was reflecting, I've been reflecting, as everyone has during a pandemic. We've been forced to have time to, even with kids, all the kids I have, I still have a lot of alone time, and thoughts come up. And I think, why are these thoughts coming up and how could they potentially be affecting me moving forward? Mm. I want to now evolve. Could there be trauma in some experiences that I've had? And if so, in my own reflection, especially last year, I spoke a lot about self-love, and not once did I mention therapy. Not even, it didn't even cross my mind.
Wow.
Which is exactly. And when it hit me, I thought, I had the answer, oh, you do this and you do that. But I had to question myself, why did I not think therapy, why didn't even come into my realm of thought? And then I had to kind of, you know, think, am I comfortable with the therapy? Is there any stigma attached to it? So I wanted to talk about what is trauma mm-hmm. from your perspective. And yeah, if we just start there. So what is trauma? How would you kind of summarize?
So if we're going to speak about, you know, mental trauma, mm-hmm. How I would kind of describe that would be some type of a major stress situation that may have happened to you physically, mm-hmm. mentally, or emotionally. And it's funny because, you know, it was my own traumas that kind of born Lovely Bear, to be fair.
You see.
And again, this is why I do Lovely Bear, because I want people to understand mm-hmm. how different types of trauma can affect your mental well-being. So, you know, just little things, for example, say a co-parenting situation. Mm-hmm. Now, that can cause either party a lot of stress.
Right.
You know, and depending on the level of severity of the exchange between the two parents. So, mm-hmm. you know, you often have situations that, you know, all of us probably have friends or family who've been through this, yeah. you know, where one party is maybe somewhat dependent on the other side providing financially, and yes. they're not doing that. So what does that mean? That other person then has to either work harder, which then leads more stress to them. There could be arguments between the two parties, which again leads to more stress. And over time, sustained stress is traumatic for your mental health and your mental mm-hmm. well-being. And mm-hmm. and I think that this is where I think people need to have a broader understanding of how these little things that you experience through life can just build up. And then before you know it, you're swimming in depression, you're swimming in anxiety, and a whole host of other different things.
Gosh, it's just, some things can spark. But how did you connect it? I think, okay, so that's interesting. And I think it's very, this is something that is rife in the Black community, I would say, especially in all communities. Everyone has a form of trauma, mm. but there's so much unresolved. Like, how do we make the connection from this is a stressful situation to, know this has become traumatic and now I need a different type of help rather than working more hours, getting another job to pay these bills, arguing, you know, how did you even link therapy into?
So for me personally, I've always had an understanding that counselling therapy was important. So I remember when I was 19, mm-hmm. I'm 37 now. So okay. I remember when I was 19 and mm-hmm. In my local area, Croydon, we had a place called Off the Record where they gave free counselling for under 25s.
Amazing.
And I think I was suffering from quite low self-esteem at the time. Mm-hmm. Not that it was really impacting anything that I was doing, but I just felt within myself that, you know, so I was like, oh, free counselling, let me go. And I did. And I did the six sessions and the counsellor there, he was a white male, and back then I probably didn't even consider that a Black therapist would actually be important because I was so young. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know of anybody that had gone into counseling or therapy, but for me I was just like, oh, it's free, so why would I not do it, kind of thing. So I've always done therapy in some kind of form if I felt like I needed it. Fast forward, not 10 years, but around that kind of time, I had a very violent break-in at my home. Mm-hmm. And that I literally suffered from PTSD as a result of that. So I ended up having psychotherapy, I think maybe for about 3 months, because it was so bad. Like, you know, when it got dark, I was afraid. Mm. Work allowed me to leave work at 4 o'clock every day. If mm-hmm. I saw someone in a hoodie or something like that, I would literally shake. The nightmares. Yeah, you know. Gosh. So I knew that I was traumatized, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think my real breakthrough in understanding what trauma is and was, it's so funny. I think I've told this story on my podcast before. Mm-hmm. But I was I think I was on Twitter one day and I saw this this article, this blog had been retweeted, and it said, is Beyonce in an emotionally abusive relationship with Jay-Z? Mm-hmm. So I looked at this and I was like, what kind of, you people will write about any thing. And so I literally scoffed and I was like, oh, let me just read this stupid article, you know, please. And the blogger put forward a very convincing case of why Beyonce actually probably was in an emotionally abusive relationship as a result of Jay-Z's continuous infidelity. Mm-hmm. And then she backed up what she was saying with a book written by a psychotherapist who basically counsels men who have abusive tendencies and not necessarily physically abusive. This could be emotionally, financially, all that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And what I then realized after reading that book was that actually I was in an emotionally abusive relationship just because of the sustained infidelity that I encountered in my marriage.
Right.
And for me, that is when the penny dropped and I was like, I've been walking around here for the past 10, 15 years thinking I'm okay, but I'm displaying the same behaviors almost as a woman that may have been physically abused.
You see?
And that was the biggest shock of my life. And literally, I was like, right, okay, I need to find myself in therapy because there's a lot of depth and unpicking and unpacking that I need to do. You know, because I remember, you know, someone once said to me, you know, you don't love yourself. And I was like, what do you mean? She was an older lady, you know, acting as a kind of mentor. Yeah. She was like, you don't love yourself. Okay. And I was like, what are you talking about? You
don't coming from a place of love.
I didn't feel like it was.
No.
But in hindsight now, I can totally understand what she was saying because she was like, if you really loved yourself, you wouldn't still be in the situation that you are. And I couldn't see it. I literally couldn't see it. So that is why now I make it a mission to open people's eyes through other people's stories so they can see that this could be affecting you mentally, you know. And also, not to kind of rabbit on, sorry, but
no, you're not at all.
What I kind of find as well is that, you know, we all deal with our traumas in different ways.
Yes.
So you might have somebody who carries their trauma via their weight. Mm-hmm. You might have someone that carries their traumas via smoking excessive amounts of weed. You might have somebody who drinks too much. You might have somebody who overworks. You might have someone who, you know, physically works out too much. Everybody carries their traumas differently, you know, and it manifests itself in different ways. And this is why it's so important to identify what yours are and work on them, essentially.
Amazing. There's so much there to unpick and, you know, to reflect on. And you're so right about unresolved trauma showing up in, you know, work laziness and overworking and things like that. I just wonder, was there any stigma, even at 19 or when you revisited therapy, has there ever been any stigma? Was it something you discussed with anyone or did you just kind of go off your own back just out of interest?
No, I just went off my own back because, again, like I say, I didn't know anybody that was in therapy, especially as black
people. Not in that way. Sorry. I wanted to ask if you've got siblings, no, or a parent or someone, and you said to them, oh, I'm just going to go to therapy. How would they?
Oh, their reaction.
Oh, we were friends. Yeah. So was it, is there a stigma attached to it or would you just keep it to yourself anyway?
Oh, no, there definitely was. When I'd say to like my mom or my dad, oh, yeah, I'm just going for a counseling. Yeah, they'd be like, why? Why, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, lots.
the more I find out, it's just
And I think there's this notion that, you know, if you go to counseling or therapy, it means that you're rave stalking mad, and that's not the case at all, you know. So nobody really pressured me or kind of was like, oh, meh, meh, kind of thing, but it was a bit like,
you're being the top, or I'm really, you know, it's just unnecessary. And oh, here she goes again. Kind of, and I understand that. And that's again why I think I was so blocked out of even considering therapy, because in my culture, I'm African, British. In our culture, we tend to keep things private in the family anyway.
Mm-hmm.
How much more talk? You know, it's not really anything that's going on should stay within the family as a confidential person anyway, and my mom's a very confidential person as it is, so anything you're going through, unless it's something that, you know, death of a, you know, something's happened that way and people will find out anyway, everything else is kind of kept into the house. So to even bring up therapy, it'll be like, well, you have church, you know, church is there, you can pray at least. That is the kind of outlet, the only outlet that is supposedly supposed to kind of be able to resolve issues. And, you know, prayer does work. I am a Christian. I do have faith, but faith without works is dead. And sometimes people need more. Mm-hmm. People need a lot more. They need to work with the right person. So I think I blocked. That's why when it came to me, just as the way you said it came to you, how you were unaware that you were in an emotional relationship. For me, I was unaware that some experiences have been traumatic and potentially blocking, evolving.
Yes.
So you've faced stigma, you can, to an extent, but would you say that yours was just kind of like, you could tell them, they roll their eyes and you just went anyway? Is there any kind of, what advice could we give to anyone that feels, How has going to therapy helps you to the point where you just don't even care what people think and you're going to go anywhere? Yeah.
Do you know the thing? The thing is, I never cared what people thought anyway.
Okay, you're not that kind of, right, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously there's going to be in some aspects, but for me, I inherently know what's best for me. And I know that going to therapy is and was the best thing that I could have ever done. So there's nothing that anyone could have said to me. Unless I had to ask them for money to pay for it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm an adult. I'm a homeowner. I'm a professional. There is nobody in this world that could convince me to not, because at the end of the day, I think what we have to appreciate is that therapy is no different to keeping your body healthy by eating while going to the gym. So if we all understand that, you know, we have to work our muscles.
We just need to get to that place, don't we, as a community?
Yeah, exactly.
And it can start by, if someone is saying they're going to therapy, just making it as normal as I'm going to the gym,
you know, literally
eating healthy for now and taking on this new diet. It's a change, it's a mindset change. We think about why would there be this stigma around it? Like I said, for me, it's like a cultural thing. Nobody wants to admit that. They probably think, I guess as parents, you think, what did I do wrong to make my child want to go to therapy? When it's not really about that.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, speaking to a lot of Black therapists of different cultures and stuff like that, amongst, you know, Black African, Caribbean, Asian, and even Middle Eastern cultures, you find the same thing. We have this culture where we keep things within the community, within our own families. Now, I'm sure everybody can testify that isn't actually helpful. It isn't. Finally, you know, and this is how a lot of things like abuse, sexual abuse within families happen, because nobody wants to speak out. And then again, you have to think about the long-term manifestations of these types of issues. Somebody who has been sexually abused is not able to speak about it. What kind of life do you think they are going to live going forward?
Right. Just every relationship is a question mark if they can even enter into one to begin with.
Yeah.
And it will come out. It will manifest in some way eventually. Outburst, you know, drug abuse, whatever it is.
Exactly.
Overworking, promotion. It like you said, it always comes out in some way, shape or form anyway. This is so deep. Okay, so with regards to therapy itself, how has it helped you then? If you had to kind of, as you're saying, you're an advocate for it, a strong advocate. So how exactly has it...
For me, therapy was like somebody holding up a mirror to me and me actually seeing myself truly for who I am. And the reason I say that is because we, as individuals, we have blind spots, right? So there are things that you know about yourself and there are things that people know about you that you know about you. But there's also things that people know about you that you don't know about yourself. Yeah. And then you have blind spots. And that's where, or you have the unknown, for example, where you don't even know things about yourself and other people don't know. So I'll give you an example. A friend might say to me, oh, Dion, you know, you're stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you are. No, I'm not. And then I'll give an example, or then I'll ask someone else, and three other people will say, yeah, no, you are kind of stubborn, you know. And I'm like, oh, well, if all these three different people are saying the same thing and they're not all connected as friends or family,
yeah,
then there must be some type of truth in that. So with that information, you now have to look at, okay, well, why is it? Why am I stubborn? Let's unpack and let's unpick that. Now, because I've been through so many bouts of therapy, because I'm training towards becoming a psychotherapist, mm-hmm, and
yeah,
I'm just generally really trying to work on my self-awareness.
Yes.
I can do that. I can now, not to say that I don't need therapy, because of course I do, but I can actually now dig down deep and find out where these behaviors that I might be demonstrating are coming from, you know? Does that make sense?
It does make perfect sense.
Mm.
Have you been able to so far find out, in terms, if say it was stubbornness, where and why, if you want to share, like, just that particular trait, where do you think it stems from? Why do you think you have it in maybe in a higher dose than someone else or one of your friends?
Can I just say, I don't really think I'm that stubborn. This is the defiance. This is the ego now coming up. I think my stubbornness might come from,
or someone's stubbornness. We can talk in third person. It's okay. Yeah. So if someone to link it, not you, of course not. You're
no. I don't mind laying myself out here. Mm-hmm. I think an element of my mild stubbornness might come from a place of,
I think I can match you with stubbornness, but go on.
You think anyway. So?
Yeah.
I think it comes from a place of me feeling like I inherently know everything. And again, this isn't from like an ego-based place, because clearly I know I don't know everything. I'm not a brain surgeon, I'm not an astronaut. Yeah. But I feel like when it comes to me, I know why, and you're just wrong. Right. However, I can now appreciate that isn't always the case, Dion. So there, you know, I still have a lot of work to do on myself. Does that make sense?
Of course.
So
one of my questions would be, this might be a lifelong, for some people it could be an ongoing, there isn't any, would you say there's a timeline on therapy, you know, an end date?
I think that probably in an ideal world, if you could afford to, maybe being in therapy, I don't know, maybe once. If you've got a specific issue, I think, yeah, maybe once a week for a year. Because they say it takes about a year before, depending on what issues you have, is when, you know, your therapist might have a breakthrough with you, for example. I think for specific issues, you could maybe do a year, and maybe like once a year have like maybe 6 weeks bouts kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Right.
Okay. And then just make an assessment at the end of that.
Yeah, period. You know, because we have to be realistic. Therapy isn't cheap. You know, there's a lot of organizations, especially black ones, coming up now that are offering therapy for £20 to £25 a session, which is amazing. Because usually,
is that hourly? Would you typically?
It's 50 minutes. It's 50
minutes. Okay, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Usually counselling for low income people, you're looking at about £40, and it can go up to anything. It's like £100, £110 an hour. Right. So it's not something that is cheap. However, you just have to try and get in on as many free resources that you can via your GP and the NHS if you can, you know. But the waiting lists are very long. I tell you that. Right. They're very long.
That was kind of my next question. If someone feels, oh my gosh, you know, these two ladies' conversations triggered something in me and I feel maybe I do have some trauma, but I don't even know where to start and I cannot afford therapy at the moment, and you know, I'm on a very low income and it's something I would like, but I can't afford. are there any tools that someone could implement at home, even just to self-discovery or...
Yeah, oh gosh, loads. Okay, so I'll tell you about some things that I like to do. So after a therapy session, what I started to do was have self sessions. So I would kind of review what we spoke about and how I felt about it, because again, sometimes it took me a while for me to drop my pride. So if my therapist suggested something to me, like I remember in the early days, she again suggested you don't love yourself, and I was mad. I was like,
oh, this is the first time I heard it. You're like, oh, who are you?
Yeah, I was like, oh. And so what I do basically is everyone has a voice record app on their phone.
Yeah,
just talk to yourself, literally, and you know it will save it with the date. You can name it as this is what I was talking about, and just keep them in your phone, and you'll be so surprised when you go back 6 months and listen to what you've been saying. You'll be like, what another thing I like to do personally is journaling, or even just making notes. So sometimes if I'm feeling highly frustrated or highly anxious about something, or I feel like I can't necessarily speak on something, I will just pull out my notepad and I will write everything down. So I have like a spider diagram. This is the situation. This is how I'm feeling. Okay, so what can we now do about this? And I promise you, when you do little things like that, you feel slightly lifted. You know, that manic confusion and all this buzzing around in your head just kind of goes once you put it down on paper. Another thing, which is another good thing to do, is mirror talk. So literally sit in front of your mirror and talk to yourself, and you'll be so surprised again about what comes out.
Gosh, the tears, but I would imagine first. But yeah, it's... looking at yourself is a big thing to begin any process, I think. Mirror talk. Yeah, I've heard of that one and use that sometimes myself. And that is a massive eye opener and a really good tool. See, that's so good, because like I said, not everyone can afford or think, you know, even just to get to the first steps, just how we can help ourselves. And this this podcast is The Confident Mum. And like I said, I can't believe I missed therapy for so long on this podcast. And trauma... I don't think anyone can have a baby and not experience any kind of trauma, whether it's just the first trimester alone. And I've been through it, and it's traumatic every single time. It's different every single time. But there's just a trauma, even just a trauma of going from being who you are to being a parent, to being a mum. That transition itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Being me to being, oh my God, me, but I've got this baby and this responsibility. So, I wanted to talk about therapy and motherhood. Is that something that you discussed with your therapist as an individual aspect, if it was necessary? But if not, what advice would you give to mums and how they can?
So I actually started my last bout of therapy after my daughter was born. So she would have been about 9 months old. And I think I had just got to a place where I'd emotionally just hit rock bottom. Yeah. You know, when you've got a new baby, and I was very, you know, very invested in making sure that everything I did was, you know, not perfect, but yeah, I guess as a new mum, you're trying to be the perfect mum kind of thing, you know. So
whatever that is, you're trying to be, exactly
whatever that is. So I was literally exhausted. I was exhausted. You know, my self esteem had really come down. I had the post pregnancy hair shedding. I lost so much hair. Yeah. Oh my goodness. You know, so I just wasn't feeling myself, you know. I was already separated from my husband. So yeah, there was a lot of things. So,
yeah.
There was a lot of things going on.
And nothing prepares you for becoming a mom, not the antenatal. We miss out the whole psychological aspect of motherhood.
Definitely. I think for me, another thing that I when I was pregnant, because I kind of foresaw how stressful it might be, I started to do meditation.
But how did you... When you say you foresaw, is it because you've seen someone else go through something, or is I'm just trying to find out how you... I did second and third time because I've been around this mountain a few times, but the first time I was in a bubble like most people. Swimming around and I'm having a baby, yay kind of. That's how it was the first time for me, so I just wondered how you even had that foresight.
It was just intuition, to be honest. Right. Yeah, and that's honestly all I can say. Yeah. It was just literally intuition. It was just like, you need something that where you can, you know, calm your mind. Because the thing is, again, I'm not a very highly strung or anxious person. I've never suffered from depression or anything like that. But I just something in me was just like, look, you just need to do this, you know? And I did, and I started to go to meditation classes every week, and I literally went to the point that I couldn't lie down on that floor anymore because it was just, my belly was just so big and it was just uncomfortable. I couldn't relax. Yeah. Meditation teacher used to do like sound baths as well. So it was just like using different kind of instruments just to kind of relax you and help with meditation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
See, I did all of that with my second, and my second experience was so different to the first.
Interesting.
From aquanatal to breathing exercises, my labor lasted all of like 5 minutes, literally. It was so quick. Everything went tickety-boo, dare I say it, you know, for lack of a better term. And it's just amazing what some certain tools that we can use for mums. And I think mums are coming more in tune and aware of, some people do hypnobirthing, preparation and breathing exercises, but you still have to go home and you've still got the baby.
Yeah.
And then there can be some tears and other psych issues and then whatever that's going on. So we've looked at some stats and, you know, mental health is rife, especially among young Black girls or Black women in general that have children. Just what advice, or maybe that's the advice, but what advice can you give for the maybe postpartum and therapy? Is there anything that you can just pull upon that you could, or just motherhood and therapy, if you can?
I think you have to be very...
Would you say therapy is necessary for mums in your... And if so,
I think I think so. Even just to have that hour away from your baby, I think it's really important, because I was someone who, again, it was my first child, so I felt like, you know, she had to be with me all of the time because I was breastfeeding as well. So I think it's important to have that time, and I look forward to my therapy sessions. I look forward to the half an hour drive there, I look forward to the hour there and the half an hour drive back, because it was 2 hours one day a week that I literally had to my... It was guaranteed that was my time. But also, you know, I understand that, again, not everybody has the privilege, I guess, of being able to have that time to themselves, you know, and even being able to kind of afford it and stuff like that. So what I would say is that if you aren't in a position where you can afford to have therapy, or, you know, there isn't really anybody that could have your child for you, if you could potentially find a low-cost one that can do a Zoom call, because I think this is I think this is where therapy is definitely going to be headed now, and not having to see a therapist face to face technically should reduce the cost a little bit. And another thing that I always kind of say to people as well, find a therapist that looks like you, or at least can understand you culturally. Because
why is that important? Yeah.
Oh, God, I'll tell you why it's so important. Because there's just a lot of things that you don't have to explain. So, for example, there's an organisation called Barton. It's the Black and Asian National Therapy... Black and Asian Therapy Network, www.baatn.org. Just Google them, and basically they have a database of Black and Asian therapists, so you can literally see their picture, see their qualifications, see how much they charge, and you can pick some that resonates with you. So for me, I wanted somebody who was of Jamaican heritage, mm-hmm. so he would understand some things that I would say, that I would, some experiences that I had that I wouldn't have to explain.
Even some expressions for example, that you might.
That. So for example, you know, my grandmother, it was Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. So let's say for example, I'm like, oh, you know, when I was little, my grandma used to speak in tongues and pray around the house.
Yes.
If I said this to a white English counsellor.
Atheist.
She's like, what? What do you mean, speaking in tongues? What do you mean?
That's by the time you've explained 20 minutes, 10 minutes.
Right, I don't, look, time is money. It's money, honey. I ain't got time for this.
Let's be real, we have to keep it real. So representation, you need someone that can resonate with you. Similarly, if I was going to therapy again, it would be great to have someone of a Nigerian background.
Absolutely.
And the culture and understand mm-hmm. why. So then they can help you explain, I guess, why you were brought up that way, why culturally we turn to God in a, you know, for the right reasons, but why it's very, it shows up very differently, maybe as religious, or so then if you mm-hmm. come out of what they perceive to be, they don't know, this is the way we were taught, you're diversifying too much into other areas of even Christianity, mm-hmm. then that's wrong. So for example, in our culture, we tend to only be Catholic and Anglican, so Pentecostal, some people would be like, whoa, those churches speak, you know, in tongues. So there's so many mm-hmm. different things to understand, and yeah, you're right. So it's a time, you know, saving time, literally time. Just being able to just be yourself, I guess.
Exactly. And think about how much you could get done in a session if you didn't have to explain all these different things, you know. If you just for example, you know, the apparent fear of things like witchcraft and stuff like that.
Yes.
Can you imagine trying to explain that to somebody who has no clue? They're going to think you're insane. They're going to think your family are insane.
They might refer you, especially if you just had a kid. So next thing you know, you might have social services.
Right.
Interpretation. So I completely understand. So you're saying if you're going for therapy, try and endeavor to get, especially for something, you know, deep in culture, or representation definitely matters.
Absolutely, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, obviously you have to work with what you've got. So if you're a black person living in Scotland, I don't know how many black Scottish therapists there are up there. Mm-hmm. But just also bear in mind that, you know, like I say, a lot of therapists are going to be doing
online
mm-hmm. you know, Zoom or Microsoft Team calls or Skype or what have you. So I would say in your first instance, just try your hardest. But if you can't, you know, it doesn't mean that a white therapist isn't good. It just might, it might just take a bit longer because of certain things that you have to explain. And also, just because someone's black and just as because someone's of the same culture as you doesn't even mean that they're going to be good therapists either.
Yeah.
You know?
I think someone else spoke about that. Sorry. Yeah. Just that you, and I wanted to ask, that was my next question actually, but you finish.
Oh, what was I saying? So just saying, yes, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be a good therapist for you. And this is why you have like the kind of intro session where you can kind of get a feel as to whether or not you kind of resonate with your therapist, because it's a relationship that has to be built over a course of time. So if you don't like your therapist, and not because they're maybe suggesting things that you don't like, but just, you know, you might just have a good feel, then
feeling
just, yeah, then you change, you know. But you obviously have to give your therapist notice and what have you. But
I wanted to ask you, have you had to change therapists?
No, I did consider it with my last one, but that was only because, like I say, she was suggesting things that I didn't want to hear, but she was right. Olga, thanks.
That's amazing. I met someone else and she said the same thing, that, you know, don't be afraid to change your therapist. You are investing a lot of money.
Yeah.
Give them a chance. And it could and again, they should be quite open for you to do that. If they feel that you're not going to be opening up, it's just going to waste
absolutely
waste time and delay your healing journey. What I wanted to kind of question on now is very, and it wanted to know if you're familiar with the term epigenetics.
Yes.
I think a lot of trauma in our community, and in communities that you raised earlier in the podcast, where we're quite closed off and haven't culturally or historically seen people go out of their homes and families to discuss certain issues for reasons that we've already mentioned. But in terms from the epigenetic, I was looking at that, and why I think it's so important, again, to consider therapy is because we just don't want to pass down through our genes. It's actually proven scientifically that you can pass down trauma. And as mums, I'm just thinking that, I think, was the wake-up call, and I thought, wow, that is actually true. And I wondered if you don't mind sharing, or someone you know, or any experience in therapy, or in your conversations, have there been patterns between maybe you and your mom, or your mom and your grandparent, or something in your family that's been a pattern that you think, oh,
I've got a good example. So, on my paternal side, there is a pattern of very bad relationships between fathers and their sons, and this goes back maybe about five generations. So my maiden name is Simpson, and through researching my family tree and just piecing together bits of information I had from other family members, technically I'm not even supposed to be a Simpson. My surname is supposed to be Smith. But what happened was, is because of a very violent relationship between my great-great-grandfather and his son. His son ran away, and by the time he got married, he changed his surname to Simpson. And then subsequently, since then, with each generation that has gone by, there has been discourse between fathers and their sons. So my grandfather, he actually ran away from his dad because his dad wanted to kill him.
Right.
Yeah. And this is something that had kind of, and even now I can kind of see on that side of the family that sometimes the relationship, the majority of relationship between dads and their sons aren't good.
Right.
Is that a coincidence?
There we go. Not according to Dr. Joy DeGruy, who came up with the chemical side of epigenetics and how things are, her work was looking at slavery and how it's affected African Americans. You know, Caribbeans and anyone in, you know, that was, descendants of the slave, and their ancestors were slaves, and how it still impacts today.
Yeah.
And you just think, so we're not just fighting for our own healing, it's for the generations that are coming. But I think, how would you have known that? I mean, there's so much that I don't even know where to begin. That is such a profound... Is that something that is kind of now common knowledge among your dad's side of the family?
No, because the thing is, again, with certain generations, they're just not really prepared to hear that, if that makes sense. Because...
Yes. Yeah, it makes a lot. Yeah.
Although they might be able to say, oh yeah, this happened, that some they're just not willing to connect the dots, because especially if you are now the perpetrator of the same behavior that happened to you previously, and this is where, you know, we hear about things called generational curses. No, actually, it's PTSD passed down through the generations, through your genes.
Ooh, that is a word and a message, and you know? And I think as well, going on from that, again, in African cultures, again, I can say that a lot of things that go wrong, we tend to, oh, someone doesn't like our family, they're using witchcraft, this is all a bad mind thing, vibe, said, nobody can do anything to anyone. That means you're giving power to the, you know, it's just whatever, they're not powerful enough. We have to kind of look within and find out, try and link the dots or connect the dots if we have access to that. I know, again, a lot of cult families as well, we can't even trace back that far. You were talking about your great-great-grandfather?
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite...
To be able to, I can literally trace to my grandfather at best, and even they, you know, so it's just, again, a lot of what we're working with is very much...
just past time, kind of all history.
Kind of, what am I going to do now to help the next... Mm. Yeah. But that is so interesting if you can.
Mm. Well, no, do you know what? I find it interesting that you said that because...
could be a unique thing. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, no, because to be honest, like, I can't speak for other Caribbean countries, but I know for Jamaicans, one of my ancestors I've been able to trace back to 1750, which is absolutely out of this world amazing, you know? But I just kind of assumed that everyone else was okay. I don't know. Like, I just thought Jamaicans were particularly hard done by, because unless your slave master kept records of you, then you have no idea.
More storytelling. I think what happened with a lot of African cultures, when they came over to the UK, a lot of it was abandoned. And, you know, because how African people keep things going is by verbally storytelling. Mm. So things aren't necessarily written down or archived or put in a library or anything. It's just what you've been told, and that's how culture progresses and is kept on. But if you're not told stories, or if you unfortunately your grandparents go before they've had their grandkids, then you're just working with, but that's, you know, another discussion about how when I spoke about it briefly in one of my last episodes, just about them coming over, because I was asking you off record when I asked you how many generations are you here in the UK. I think you said you're first, but typically Jamaicans tend to be in their third generation or fourth. Is that right? Would I be fair to say that? UK born. Whereas African Nigerians, we tend to be in our, like, we're first generation. So most Africans, not all, but most, especially Igbo, we are, like I said, on our first generation. So we're learning a lot. So there's nothing, it's all new. And it's just a case of now, when your parents got, you know, the green light, were going to the UK, it was like, woo, you know, it was seen as phenomenal, amazing. And they did the right thing. It wasn't a bad decision in any way, shape or form. But they wanted us embedded in the culture here. And that's why Igbos tend to be very well educated. Education is held in the highest esteem. But there's other things that happen. You forget just a little bit your culture, and when you become, you know, they were none the wiser. So there's so many complexities to everything. And how, what I like to quote is Maya Angelou's quote. I think she said that, you know, do what you know until you know better. And when you know better, as mums today, families, you know, how can we not forget our culture, but just try and do the best for our kids now? And I think based on what you said, therapy can play a big role in healing, definitely.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Definitely. And recommend
that you're still, are you still going to therapy, or do you just go in bouts just for yourself?
I haven't been back to therapy since 2000. I only ended because my therapist was shutting up shop.
Okay.
And I just haven't found anybody yet. But I've also been busy too, which is no excuse really. But but in the meantime, like I said, I've been training myself towards psychotherapy qualification. So each lesson in itself is almost like a little mini therapy session as well. So I'm on the lookout.
And you've got tools in your arsenal. If you were, like you said, you journal, you do mirror work, you've got things that you know what to do, maybe to help you in the meantime. If you default back into certain patterns and ways.
Yeah.
One of my last questions is, how would you differentiate between something that's traumatic and maybe just a bad experience? Because everyone feels things in different ways. So I always wonder how people can, some people are able to, I don't know, they break up with a boyfriend, for example, not even a marriage, just, and then they're depressed for 6 months, but someone loses a relative or a fat or a sister, and they just, I don't know, they put on a brave, not a brave face, but they're able to just push through. So what is it, you know, how do you...
The thing is, I think everybody's mental resilience is different based on their experiences. Mm-hmm. So, like, just as an example, you might be able to lift your baby in their carry cot with 3 shopping bags, mm-hmm. and march through, and your muscles don't ache. I might only be able to lift up the carry cot and one bag and my arms in pieces the next day. And that's just because we've had different experiences. You know, you might have done shot put in school, I don't know, or javelin, and I just didn't do any. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you can't really compare people's experiences just because everybody is different. You know, the girl who broke up with her boyfriend is depressed for 6 months. Mm-hmm. We don't know what happened to her prior to that point. You know, mm-hmm. she might have grown up in a household where her parents were emotionally unavailable. So therefore, when she enters into a relationship, she might be very, very clinging on because she's never had that that love before. Then when it breaks off, she feels rejected again, and that will spiral her down into depression. Someone who, like the example you gave, somebody who might have lost a relative, you know, on the face, I have to remember, on the face of it, they might look like they're coping well. But what happens is that when you have years upon years upon years of trauma, imagine it like an onion. And the levels of trauma, you have to kind of peel away. But imagine this onion forming underground. The layers grow and they grow and they grow until you get this bulb. And people who have sustained amount of trauma basically build up all these almost protection layers. So although it might not appear that, you know, they're affected and they're okay, something is, it's still there, but it's just gonna show itself in another way. There's a really good book called The Body Keeps Score by, oh, I can never remember his name, Dr. Something. I'll send you a screenshot of it.
Yeah, oh, brilliant.
And what he says is that when we experience mental or even physical trauma, our brains literally rewires itself. So in order to cope with any other things that kind of come at us. So an example he used is, you know, you might have a friend who ends up in the same situations again and again when it comes to relationships, whether they be verbally abusive, physically abusive, or what have you, you know, and you're like, why do you keep going back into these relationships? But what happens is that it's so deep. I mean, obviously we're really talking like on a very like biological science level here, but the brain as a coping mechanism literally has to rewire all of like the neurons and stuff like that just to keep you safe in a way. And sometimes safety might mean you returning back to those same situations because you can relate to them.
And it normally happens as a pattern. You're trying to evolve into a new, something new, and then maybe you just default back into old patterns. It's just that default, isn't it? Your default mechanism is to, I don't know, go to that bad relationship or to...
Again, yeah. And this is why it's important that arming yourself with knowledge is helpful, because rather than... I guess what I'm trying to say is, we have to learn to be patient with people, especially people that have experienced trauma. You know, the person that you see sitting on the roadside who clearly has a drug addiction and is begging for money. And, you know, sometimes we can kind of be like, oh, why don't they just get up and get a job?
Yeah.
They have gone through something so deep that has pushed them to that point where drugs are their only escape. And now we know that their brain has literally been rewired and it doesn't work the same that how ours does, you know? So yeah, just compassion and patience.
And will therapy help with rewiring, I guess? Is that a role, or does that come more into something a bit deeper, just out of interest?
I don't want to because I'm not a professional, but talking therapy will definitely help.
Right.
It will definitely help because behavior is something that comes from the brain, right? Yeah. So everybody can change a behavior. And I suppose maybe in turn, then the brain may be able to potentially rewire itself. But there's a lot of things that need to happen, for that change to take place.
Wow. And what would you think you say is a consequence of not dealing with trauma, whether it's or unresolved trauma?
Like I said earlier, weight gain, weight loss, smoking, alcohol abuse, physical abuse, whether you're the perpetrator or the victim, porn addiction, all different types of addictions, your behavior. Are you an angry person? What are you suppressing that's making you so angry? You might overwork. There's so many different ways in how your trauma can manifest itself. We were speaking about earlier about generational things. Yes. I think particularly in Black cultures, we have a thing about beating our children, right? Mm-hmm. Now from the research that I've done, the physical chastising of children wasn't in the African tradition. Children were revered as much as the elders were, and it was the community that would come together to teach the child the right way. However, due to colonialism and slavery and the barbaric ways that the Europeans treated us, we have now carried that down into how we discipline our own children. And there's I'm going to send you this video that I saw the other day. And the lady speaks about, I don't know if you've ever done this, but it really struck me because it's something that I've done that I didn't even realize. Someone pays a compliment to you about your child, and you know that compliment is valid, but you kind of almost don't want to accept it. So you're like, oh yeah, but and I find myself doing this. Like my daughter, she's very smart. She's just amazing. But if someone asks me how she is, I'm like, oh yeah, she's good. But she's a 16-year-old trapped in a 3-year-old body. And it's like, I'd almost find something.
I just accept the compliment and keep, and then
right.
Can't just and, stop.
And what this scientist explained in this video was that during slavery, this is something that's been passed down. So she likened it to a conversation between a slave master and a slave, speaking to a slave woman, and he's looking at her child as to whether he can sell them. So she'd be like, he's a knucklehead. He's very slow, sir. He can't da 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 da. And
so she's trying to prevent the selling of her child. Wow.
Right. And it's all about trying to keep your child safe. And it literally blew me, because it was something that, again, I didn't even realize that I was doing. I didn't know why I did it. I just did it.
You just don't want her to have this attention that could potentially.
Right.
When all eyes are on her, you don't know which eye is going to be the one that could potentially be next.
Right.
Psychologically, just think, no, you rather just keep her safe. She said, it's just a complex. It's just so complex. I don't know where to start, and I think the fact that it came up, I'm pleased, I'm grateful to God that this just came into my subconscious, and it's something that I want to spread. And we don't know, we can just start by reflecting, is there anything that I need to deal with, and just listening to our bodies, I guess, and seeing what comes up, as you said, and journaling, and just taking very slow baby steps. But if there's something, I guess, more complex, then we have to strongly consider now more than ever getting therapy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's just. And I read another thing, is therapy is not just, again, for And that's another, I guess that's in my subconscious, I was thinking, I haven't actually been through anything, or I have to have a loss of my, you know, that was actually quite a big thing, loss of my father at 21. But apart from that, you know, my childhood wasn't necessarily, you know, obviously, when I think of trauma and therapy, I used to think people that have been physically and emotionally abused, do you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. Up and it's like I'm comparing, I mean, so you have touched upon this, it's like I compare, oh, but if they've survived and they're okay and this, all that's happened to them, then who am I to start going to see a therapist? That's wrong. Obviously now I know that's completely and utterly the wrong attitude, completely.
Yeah. But it's good that you've got to that point where you can see that, you know, because a lot of people don't, you know, my mum's very much the same. She's like, oh, well, you know, when I was growing up, I went through X, Y, Z.
Yeah. And look at me now. I'm fine.
Yeah. You know, what are they complaining about? I went through this. And I'm like, that's not.
And have you noticed people like, that's another good point. You could be watching something with loads of people and someone will be like, oh, they're being too dramatic. Yeah. Or even a struggling mum, but I've got 3 kids and she's only got one. Honestly, what is she, how can she be struggling? Or, you know, I live on less money than them and, you know, who are they to moan about their salary?
Yeah.
And then we start to compare when if we had healed ourselves, then we would have empathy for the other person.
Absolutely.
So what someone wrote on Instagram, she's a really good page, I'll forward you her page, American Therapist, she just said 10 reasons people go to therapy that other people might not be aware of. So, you know, just to evolve, it's not always, you know, something drastic. To cry without being prompted to stop or cheer up, to speak from the heart, to talk without fear of being judged openly.
Yep.
To learn more about themselves. To have someone sit with them during difficult times, to process life events, to share things that other people can't understand, maybe to talk about people who need therapy but won't go. Yeah. I found that point quite funny. Yeah. I thought, oh, God. And then finally, to hear themselves talk without having to listen to another person talking about themselves.
Yeah.
So I think that really was the cement for me, like I said, because the stigma that we spoke about at the top of this conversation, we can't afford to worry about what everyone else might or might not be thinking. We don't have to be traumatized to the point where we're waking up and crying before we go to therapy.
Yeah, and why allow yourself to get to the
why? But if we, and as we evolve, and we're evolving every day, and involvement should be a goal that everyone should have in a positive way, then why not talk about it? You might not need, after 6 weeks, that could be it for you, or six sessions, and you think, oh my God, I've now got tools that if I'm feeling down, I can work on, and I'm at rest or at peace with what happened in my past.
Absolutely.
So anything you want to conclude, or any final points?
I think I would just say, you know, love yourself to the point where you care about your mind, you care about how you behave towards other people and how you behave towards yourself. And, you know, if you're finding that you're using other things as coping mechanisms, you definitely need to speak to somebody. And it doesn't even mean, like, you know, you have to be a Phil Mitchell. Well, for anyone based in the UK, Phil Mitchell, you know, has had drink issues. His fair show of alcoholism and stuff like that. He doesn't have to
be walking around looking like the token mad person.
No, you know, if you know that, you know, you must have a bottle of wine every single evening just to get yourself to wind down, you're not managing your stress effectively, you know? So just things like that. If you're smoking excessively, if you're like the stuff I just mentioned earlier, there's a range of different behaviors that you might be exhibiting, you know. So just focus on loving yourself, I would say. would be my.
You are worth it. We are worth it. And absolutely. As you said, there's talk therapy. You can go through your GP for those people that are interested in therapy. But again, finances are not necessarily here for now. There's resources that you can just to get yourself in a frame of mind. And I think that's. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's definitely
Me too. Thank you for having me.
No, that's really good. It's been an eye opener. I hope it's helped the listeners. I'm sure it has. And generally, I'm really impressed with the younger generation. I don't think they have the same kind of stigma attached to therapy. I know there's quite a lot of young people now that are really going for it. So the tide is turning, which is good. It can only be a good thing. And hopefully, therapy will be just like gym, you know, in the next 5-10 years, and it will just be a normal part of life.
Yeah, it's definitely looking that way. So
I think so. You know. I definitely think so. Well, thank you, Dionne. If anyone wants to find you, what's the best way for them to kind of look you up, find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @lovelaidbear. The website is www.lovelaidbear.com, and the podcast is on Spotify, Overcast, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, you know, all the usual kind of streaming
platforms. Yeah. Amazing. All right. Well, thank you. And I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. I really enjoyed this conversation. Wow, what an amazing episode. I want to thank Dionne again for being an amazing guest. I really, really enjoyed recording with her, and I've listened to it a couple of times, this show, and I have taken some gems that I wanted to relay back to Confident Mum listeners. So the first gem I took away was that we can't afford to compare trauma. How someone experiences a traumatic event is unique to them, and we can't judge or determine how they should feel about what they're going through. Similarly, no one else should be able to judge or determine how you feel about your unique event. When I gave the example of the girl who had broken up from a short-term relationship and was traumatized, compared to someone who had lost a loved one and was able to pick themselves up and continue as normal, Dionne rightly said, well, we don't know the history of what that girl had been through, and therefore we can't really form a conclusion about how she should have responded to that breakup. The second point I took away was that therapy really should be normalized. It should be as normal as going to the gym, and hopefully we're going to get to that point, because there's so many more benefits to therapy that I explained and I listed at towards the end of the episode that make it so much more appealing. Thirdly, the stigma. There is stigma attached to therapy, but that can't afford to prevent us from seeking our help. Our healing is our responsibility. And even if the stigma is coming from friends or relatives, again, we have to just rise above it and really seek out this therapy, because it's just so many benefits that will outweigh any stigma that we could be faced with. And finally, with the scientific evidence of epigenetics, it's scientifically proven that trauma can be passed down from one generation to the next. It doesn't need to be as profound as the example that Dionne gave, but it could be anything. Even if you feel constantly insecure or you have a low self-esteem, this could be, you may be a product of a traumatic event that happened in your generational downline. So we need to really look at how therapy can help. I wonder what you took away from the episode. Please let me know. Get in touch with me at theconfidentmum@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Instagram at theconfidentmum and on Twitter. Send me a DM, send me a message. Let me know what you loved about this episode, and please share it. You could also leave a 5-star review. That would be amazing, so that more people can find the podcast. I want everyone to listen to this episode, and I want to thank Dionne again. If you want to follow her, she's at @lovelaidbear. Share this episode, let me know what you think, and I really thank you for listening in. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I will see you on the next one.